This is Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the great Southwest. And yes, you are in fact listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. Wide enough to keep you looking, open enough to keep you moving, dry enough to keep you honest, prickly enough to make you tough, green enough to go on living, old enough to give you dreams. Yep, this is Utah here again in the studio with Steve Baker, who's twirling the knobs and pushing the slides. That was, of course, the Borsdorfs who created that wonderful music out of an old traditional song that I could use as a theme song. The poem at the beginning is by a neighbor on the other side of the Yuba River, Gary Snyder. We are here in Nevada City, California, lost in the foothills of the Sierra, the land that time forgot. And we are locked now in an election year coming up, a bitter struggle between the hereditary oligarchy, the extractive industries, the developers, while we, in electing a new county board of supervisors, try to prioritize our ecotopian agenda. Ah, but we have the black helicopters on our side, and they're doomed. Radio station KVMR. We're a very small station in a very small town, but we have a big, wide voice. This is just after New Year's, you see, where I am, and the Rose Bowl wasn't played this New Year's, and to the consternation of everybody. Fortunately, because of streaming, because of the internet, KVMR, our little station, was able to broadcast live Tel Aviv and Haifa State in the Matzo Bowl. Well, I make songs. I've always made songs ever since I was a little kid. I make them up compulsively, or make up jingles or parts of songs. And some people like to sing those songs. I've sung them around and about for the past 40 years. I never wanted to be a commercial success. But then when you listen to my songs, you see it's a righteous sentiment because neither the subject matter nor the style lend themselves to commercialization. I am, folk song-wise, a pre-modern constructionist. Now, the singer-songwriting is going on today. Well, I like it. It's very poetic. I don't claim to understand it. It's sort of post-melodic deconstructionist para-folk. Nonetheless, I have been prevailed upon by better minds than my own to make a songbook for many years. I decided not to make a song, a book, you know, that you put up on a piano stand and play from with photographs in it and so on like that. I wanted to wait until the technology could catch up and I could make an audio songbook where I could tell the stories of where the songs came from. I thought that was a novel idea, a good one. I still think it's a good one, a good way to learn songs. It's going to be put out sometime this year by Smithsonian Folkways. Folkways is the old folk music label started by Moses Ash in New York back in the 40s. And when he passed away, he gave all of the files and all of the masters from his thousands of records, that this great archive, to the Smithsonian on the guarantee that they would keep his catalog current. And, of course, that means that they have to sell records. And they're going to put this out for me. Smithsonian, I get to be an exhibit. Well, I want you to hear samples of what this is going to sound like. So why don't we start off with the introduction? Well, this is Utah here, and welcome to my songbook. Most of the singers and songmakers I know can't or won't read music. We are inclined to learn songs by listening to them sung by others out loud or by ourselves, ear music. Now, I'm both a song learner and a song maker, and this is a collection of songs I've made. Now, I have waited patiently for technology to catch up to the idea that a songbook didn't need to be a book, but could be a set of recordings that people can learn from by ear. Besides which, I would be able to lend more sense to these songs by telling the stories of how they came about. So every song has its own introduction with its own story. That's what you've got here, sort of a non-sequential diary of years spent going about and banging into the world in a various different ways. This is where I've got to so far. Now, about song making, I say making because I work in my head. That's my office. The most I ever get out of the creative process is my knowing that a song is done, complete. Taking it out of my mind is a whole different matter. But I won't sing new songs until I know they're done. And I am very reluctant to write them down because whenever I do, I forget them. They just vanish from my mind. I don't mind this. I'd rather rely on memory than paper and electricity. That's what we're all equipped to do anyway. As to where the songs come from, I'd say that generally nothing happens inside my head until something happens outside of it. So song-making becomes a group effort between those who live events and my shaping them into songs. Now, I can't properly say that I own all of this. A lot of other people did or said things that provoked a story in my mind, which gradually flowed into a song that could be sung back to the world that gave it to me. That world, my world, a world of speakers and listeners, is well peopled with story givers. A great many of them are my elders. Now, in this world, you've got to keep track of who you owe. And I owe a lot to my elders who gave me those parts of their lives waiting to become songs. And to them, I gratefully dedicate this work. Now, these songs and stories pass on through me. I lay no further claim on them. They pass on to other people, especially to my children and their kids. This is most of what I've done with my life, kids. I wish I had been with you more to share the living of it. Still, here it is, up to now anyway. It has been one long story, and we're all in it. The most we can hope for is that in the end it will have been well told. I made this song for my older boy, Duncan, there in Salt Lake City. I left home when Duncan was little, and I've always regretted that. I regretted being able to take him on the passenger trains. Of course, then there were the short-haul runs. You could go down to Milford, Utah, and stay overnight in the last of the old Harvey hotels and then come back the next day. When he was little, the long-haul trains were a lot more difficult. Well, I did leave Utah, and I did hit the road, and I did travel around, but I always thought about that. And I always rode the train every chance I had, every chance I could get. We used to have the best transportation system in the world, you know, the spider web of railroads that went in every direction. You get anywhere on the railroad trains. And then that was all junked, all scrapped for what Ken Kesey calls these little motorized coffins. We gave up that whole system far too cheaply. And what did we settle for? Well, we want it all back. We want it all back damn fast. I was charmed to see a photograph that Mike Matika sent me from the Labor newspaper there in Normal, Illinois. It was a picture he had taken in Washington, D.C. of dining car porters and waiters picketing against a shutting down of certain Amtrak lines, and they were holding up these picket signs, and they all said, "Daddy, what's a train?"
Daddy, what's a train? Is it something I can ride? Does it carry lots of grown-up folks and little kids inside? Is it bigger than our house? Well, how can I explain when my little boy asked me, "Daddy, what's a train?" When I was just a boy, living by the track, us kids that gather up the coal in a big old gunny sack, then we heard the warning sound as the train pulled into view. The engineer had smiled and waved as she went rolling through. She blew so loud and clear, we had to cover up our ears, and we counted cars just as high as we could go. I can almost hear the steam and the big old driver scream with a sound my little boy will never know. Daddy, what's a train? Is it something I can ride? Does it carry lots of grown-up folks and little kids inside? Is it bigger than our house? Well, how can I explain when my little boy asked me, Daddy, what's a train? I guess the times have changed. Kids are different now. Some don't even seem to know that milk comes from a cow. My little boy can tell the names of all the baseball stars. I remember how he memorized the names on railroad cars. The Wabash and the TP, Lackawanna and the IC, yeah, the nickel plate, the good old Santa Fe. Just names out of the past, I guess they're fading fast. Every time I hear my little boy say, Daddy, what's a train? Is it something I can ride? Does it carry lots of grown-up folks and little kids inside? Is it bigger than our house? Well, how can I explain when my little boy asked me, Daddy, what's a train? We climbed into the car and drove down into town, right up to the depot house, but no one was around. We searched the yard together for something I could show, but I knew there hadn't been a train for a dozen years or so. All the things I did when I was just a kid, how far away those old memories appear. I guess it's plain to see they still mean a lot to me, 'cause my ambition was to be an engineer. Daddy, what's a train? Is it something I can ride? Does it carry lots of grown-up folks and little kids inside? Is it bigger than our house? Well, how can I explain when my little boy asked me, Daddy, what's a train?
There was an old rancher over in Troy, Montana, used to run Hahn's Hotel, Ralph Hahn Sr. He knew a lot of the old songs, knew a lot of the old stories. I learned from him about Colonel Charlie Goodnight and Oliver Loving, who were the founders of the Goodnight Loving Trail, the westernmost of the great cattle trails from El Paso, Texas, on up into Denver, and I understand with a long spur into Montana. Colonel Charlie Goodnight was a real pioneer. Charles, Chuck Wagon, he's the one who invented the mobile kitchen that travels with any herd. The fellow that honchoed that kitchen, the bull cook, well, they used to call him the old woman down in the Southwest because they had the foolish notion that only women do cooking. But they were hard-bitten old cowhands who got too busted up inside, too infirm to be able to sit a horse properly, couldn't do the work anymore, and got set out on the Chuck Gang. And there they had to make the food and take care of the bedrolls, doctor the chilblains and the saddle sores with the old Indian cures. A rude letdown for somebody who had led a rough and a vigorous life. This is not a cowboy song. This is a song about your work running out on you, being too old to do the work you were born to.
Beat the triangle and curse everything. If dirt was a kingdom, then you'd be the king. On the Goodnight Trail, on the Loving Trail, our old woman's lonesome tonight. Your French harp blows like a lone ball and calf. It's a wonder the wind don't tear off your skin. Get in there and blow out the light. With your snake oil and herbs and your liniment too,
You can do anything that a doctor can do, except find a cure for your own goddamn stew. On the goodnight trail, on the loving trail, our old woman's lonesome tonight. Your French harp blows like a lone bawling calf. It's a wonder the wind don't tear off your skin. Get in there and blow out the light. The cook fire's out, the coffee's all gone. The boys are up and we're raising the dawn. You're still sitting there all lost in a song. On the goodnight trail, on the loving trail, our old woman's lonesome tonight. Your French harp blows like a lone bawling calf. It's a wonder the wind don't tear off your skin. Get in there and blow out the light. Yeah, I know someday that I'll be just the same, wearing an apron instead of a name. And no one can change it and no one's to blame. The desert's a book wrote in lizards and sage. It's easy to look like an old torn out page, faded and cracked with the colors of age. On the goodnight trail, on the loving trail, our old woman's lonesome tonight. Your French harp blows like a lone bawling calf. It's a wonder the wind don't tear off your skin. Get in there and blow out the light.
Well, it was a big political event, a concert up in Toronto. I think it was in support of the Toronto Western Hospital strike. It was a matinee on Sunday, and there were a lot of people filled that hall, but they had all brought their kids. Now, to me, kids are in school all week long, and the weekend comes, and it's a day off, you know, a couple of days off. And the kids were fussy, and they were crawling around. They didn't want to be there, didn't understand what was going on. And I couldn't understand what good their parents thought it was going to do. And I decided that I would sit down as soon as I got out of there and write a song for the liberation of children.
Oh, look what I found out here in the backyard. It's fuzzy and crawls like it's going somewhere. When I open my hand up and ask you my question, you thump me and holler, "Don't bring it in here." I had me a thought that I wanted to tell you. I had an idea I wanted to share. But you make me feel like I don't know nothing, and sometimes I wonder if you even care. Oh, I'm stuck down here in a world full of giants. You push me around like a dumb little kid. And sometimes you hit me just 'cause you want to. I don't even know what it is that I did. Oh, mommy's out getting her hair up in curlers, and daddy's wrapped up in his football and beer. And maybe they think that I'm just a damn nuisance, but I sure as hell didn't ask to be here. Oh, I ain't a broom you can hide in a closet. I ain't a dog you can bribe with a treat. I'm tired of your threats and your punches and promises. I'd run away, but I can't cross the street. Surrounded by teachers and preachers and parents, you say everybody knows better than me. But I know some things that you never thought of, and you'd be surprised at the stuff that I see. Oh, I see the ants, I see the butterflies, I see the birds in the tops of the trees. And I got me a camera that doesn't miss nothing, and my friends are anything smaller than me. I've tried all I can to get your attention. I'll have to try something else, I suppose. When you tiptoe in to tuck in my covers, I think I'll sit up and bite off your nose. Now everyone's trying to get liberated. You all got the notion you want to be free. For red folks and black folks and poor folks and women, now all you damn grown-ups quit picking on me.
Nearly 40 years ago, Rosalie Sorrells and I, back there in Salt Lake, put together a a show of folk music and recitations taken from the works of Nelson Algren and Woody Guthrie and Thomas Wolfe. Now, I was unfamiliar at that time with the work of Thomas Wolfe. I fell in love with it. There were those great ringing phrases that bang on your heart like it was a gong. That's what the introduction to this song comes from, is from Thomas Wolfe. You know, in America we have this myth of freedom and mobility, that in order to be free you've got to be mobile, you've got to be able to move and shift. I always thought that was true just from the reading of history and my own experience of it. Most of the people, though, that I ever met that were addicted to the road were moving away from something. Something mean or wrong or ugly or painful had happened in their life, and it kept them on the prod, kept them going and going. And God help you if you should ever stop and stand still, because everything you're running from bangs into your butt. And you have a choice. Then you can either keep moving or you can deal with it. You can deal with it. Well, I made my stand in Spokane, Washington. I decided to see if I could live in one place. I decided to see if it was possible to be free standing upon my own ground. That's where this song comes from, Starlight on the Rails.
Walked along a road in Cumberland and stooped because the sky hung down so low. And when we ran away from London, we went by little rivers in a land just big enough. And nowhere that we went was far. The earth and the sky were close and near. And the old hunger returned, the terrible and obscure hunger that haunts and hurts Americans and makes us exiles at home and strangers wherever we go. Oh, I will go up and down the country and back and forth across the country. I will go out west where the states are square. I will go to Boise and Helena, Albuquerque and the two Dakotas, and all the unknown places. Say, brother, have you heard the roar of the fast express? Have you seen starlight on the rails? I can hear the whistle blowing, high and lonesome as can be. Outside the rain is softly falling, tonight it's falling just for me. Looking back along the road I've traveled, all the miles could tell a million tales. Each year is like some rolling freight train, and cold as starlight on the rails. I think about a wife and family, a home and all the things it means. The black smoke trailing out behind me is like a string of broken dreams. Looking back along the road I've traveled, all the miles could tell a million tales. Each year is like some rolling freight train, and cold as starlight on the rail. A man who lives out on the highway is like a clock that can't tell time. A man who spends his life just rambling is like a song without a rhyme. Looking back along the road I've traveled, all the miles could tell a million tales. Each year is like some rolling freight train, and cold as starlight on the rails.
Sometimes a fellow take the moniker of Weepy because his eyes are rheumatic, or people give him that moniker and his eyes run all the time, but This weepy that I knew took his name from the Western Pacific, which we always used to call the weepy, my favorite freight train. I first met weepy up there in Forks, Washington, when I was having lunch at a small restaurant, well, more like a diner. A fella came in wearing an apron from the kitchen with his arms loaded with dishes. Somebody stuck his foot out and tripped him, and the dishes went skidding across the floor, and they all started to laugh. And this fella from the kitchen, who turned out to be weepy, was laughing too. Well, I thought that it was mean, and I was going to raise the issue. But then I decided to wait, and I sat there for a good long time, and I watched and I listened. Weepy was one of those slow ones. Well, we've always made people who are slower than the rest of us. But in times past, like in rural America, there were always jobs that they could do, work for the cooper, the barrel maker, work for a drayer, maybe even have a small farm and get married and have a family. Everybody would know that you were slower, and you might be the butt of a joke now and again, but at least there were people around you who knew who you were. Those jobs have vanished, but those people are still there. Now, of course, they wind up in institutions until they're flushed out onto the street. Weepy was lucky to have a job in the kitchen there, and as I listened to the people talk and watched him and them, I realized he was a whole lot better off where he was than being someplace else. So as I left Forks, I was driving down to Portland. This is the song that came out of it.
Everybody laughing, Weepy doesn't know. He just stands there grinning, I guess he's kinda slow. But Weepy don't get sore, seems like he asked for more. Look at all the broken dishes on the floor. Weepy don't do nothing, there's nothing he can do. Sometimes he takes all morning just to find his other shoe. Hey, goddammit, Sid, lay off the poor dumb kid. Come on, Weep, I'll show you where it's hid. He's so damn good-natured, just laughs and takes his lumps. You never see him angry, except when he's croaking gumps. But that's no big surprise, it's right there in his eyes. Looks like Weepy's found him something more his size. Just like all these dishes, there's something in him broke. Don't guess we mean to hurt him when we play our little joke. But the social workers say he might have to go away. You ask him, I bet he'd like to stay. Why's everybody laughing? Weepy doesn't know. He just stands there grinning, I guess he's kinda slow. But Weepy don't get sore, seems like he asked for more. Look at all the broken dishes on the floor.
I was driving from Chicago to St. Louis. It was right outside Decatur, Illinois, that I picked up a hitchhiker by the name of Teddy. He was quite an old man. He was used to riding the freight trains, but he couldn't get out of the Decatur yards because of this enormous white cloud from the Staley soybean factory that enveloped the entire yard. And you could get squashed flat going into one of those yards when they're rolling loaded boxcars off of the hump and you can't hear them coming. So he had to hitchhike. He was going down to St. Louis. These old tramps, they don't like to hitchhike. And they don't like to hitchhike because a lot of people pick up a hitchhiker because they need somebody to talk to help keep them awake. So they ask you a lot of questions. Now, any old tramp knows that if you get into a situation where even the first question gets asked, it will start a non-reversible process that mystically will somehow land you in jail. So he doesn't want to be any place where people are asking questions. Well, he was on his way down to East St. Louis Yards, he said, to catch out on the Frisco Road, so I made this song for Teddy.
Frisco Road, every mile feeling I was all alone. In the places that I've seen, summers fat and winters lean, don't you know I wish that I could go back home. I don't know where I left it, though it's always on my mind. I ask the same old questions all the time. Is the old town still the same? Does anybody know my name? The years slip by like numbers on an endless highway sign. Standing here in the breakdown lane, don't think I'll make it today. And I wish the road was a big freight train, just a blowing and rolling my way. I know the rain wouldn't seem so cold on top of an old boxcar. Wherever it was I was trying to go, it wouldn't seem half so far. I remember the Roper Yard Cafe and a pretty little beanery queen. She gave those jailhouse buds away to a bum she'd never seen. Well, I tipped her with a couple of rhymes on the back of a placemat there. And I've thought about her plenty of times when I couldn't bum a square. For the time we rode on a piggyback, punching the Great Divide, the blowing snow had iced the track and the train got stuck inside. The diesel fumes, they got so thick, I thought we'd all be gassed. They sanded her out just in the nick, punched her through at last. Now, I don't claim to be too proud to shag a ride on my thumb, but I'd trade this whole hitchhiking crowd for an honest old railroad bum. And if there ever comes a day when the rails have gone to rust, I'll put my jug and bindle away, just give up in disgust. Beyond these gentle eastern hills, the soft New England sky, to the highball whistles echo still where the mile-long blazers fly. Sitting here by the toll road gates, I wonder as I rest, do the heavy, clanking, lonely freights still thunder away out west? Have you seen the morning sun putting shadows on the run? You were climbing out of some old reefer hole. High above the roaring wheels, then you know just how it feels to ride the tops and watch the prairies roll. I don't know where I left it, though it's always on my mind. I ask the same old questions all the time. Is the old town still the same? Does anybody know my name? The years slip by like numbers on an endless highway sign.
Gordon Vales is about my age, a very quiet man, very subdued, gentle. Lived in Spokane, Washington. Gordon was told that, well, his parents were told that he was retarded when he was little, and he was put in a home over there by Moses Lake. They never gave those kids any scissors to cut pictures out. They were afraid they would injure themselves. They had to tear their pictures out. Well, Gordon learned how to do that. And that's what he does. He sits in a quiet place in the park or sometimes in a corner in the drugstore with a bunch of colored construction paper and one giant thumbnail, and he doesn't look at his hands, but whatever he's looking at, he tears that paper into beautiful, beautiful pictures, very complex pictures sometimes. When I started feeling like I'd traveled too much or that there was too much going on in my brain or that when I felt troubled, I would find out where Gordon Vales was, and I would go sit with him. And our conversation was so simple and so easy that I would slow right down. Gordon Vales, I wish I knew what he was doing right now. Last time I heard, Gordon was doing exactly what he does, tearing pictures, but on a cruise ship going down to Mexico. Good luck, Gordon.
I'm a reader of books, a teller of stories, a poet in danger of drowning in words, and sometimes a singer who needs to remember that some songs are better off left to the birds. The shadow maker still picks at the paper and hands back a shadow that looks just like me. He's better than some with an eye and a thumb, for he knows how to touch and he knows how to see. The young artist waits for his friends at the doorway and feeds on the praise that belongs to the proud. His muses, all dressed in their gallery best, will bend down to greet the applause of the crowd. The shadow maker still picks at the paper, a bucking horse cowboy as plain as can be. But he's better than most with a lie or a boast, for he knows how to touch and he knows how to see. It's one of those nights in the heat of the lights when the truth is a razor, electric and shrill. The mannequins sing and the registers ring, and the dead tell us all how the living can kill. The shadow maker still picks at the paper. I feel like a door that's been handed the key. He's better than some with a knife or a gun, for he knows how to touch and he knows how to see. The shadow maker still picks at the paper and hands back a shadow that looks just like me. He's better than some with an eye and a thumb, for he knows how to touch and he knows how to see.
When I was living in Utah, I spent a good bit of time up in Park City. Well, now that was before the area redevelopment became an all-season recreational area. It was just a dying mine town then. There was the one mine open, the Silver King Coalition. I would go up there and prowl through the rubbish heaps up at the far end of the town before you take the dirt road up over Guardsman's Pass. And one time I dug in there and I found a little tin. It looked like a Prince Albert tobacco tin, but it had a belt clip on it. And I didn't know what it was, so I took it down to Ken Webb. Well, actually, I took it into the Mustache Bar. I took it into Pop Janks, and nobody would tell me. Nobody said, we don't know what that is. Then I took it into Ken Webb. He ran the photo shop. He had moved up there some years earlier from Los Angeles. And I showed it to him, and he said, yeah, well, that's a morphine tin. I don't expect anybody to tell you what it is. And I said, what you mean, morphine tin? He said, well, some of these miners, they were afraid of being trapped in a cave-in, in danger of getting burned to death from a mine explosion. So they would carry morphine with them into the mine so that they could get rid of themselves and also set their relatives' mind at ease. And they won't tell you about it, of course, because it's probably against the law. But in any case, most of these mine towns, many of the miners were Catholics, and suicide is a mortal sin. Well, I made this song out of that, but then several times, at least in Utah, I was asked not to sing it just for that reason. So I'm not entirely certain where this song fits. I didn't sing it for years and years, and finally, I decided to give it to Kate and Jody, and they made up a tune for it. Now, I didn't mention the first time around, but these songs that you're going to listen to right now, including Orphan Train, were songs that I made up and then kind of put in a box, and I didn't sing much. I just put them away, mainly probably because they were sentimental songs, and I've always felt that sentimental songs really have their place in American music. And hell, I've sung those old Baggage Coach Ahead and the Blind Boy's Dog in bars up in Camas, Utah, and watched those farmers and those ranchers weep because they were moved by them. And I stopped singing those when I came to the city, when I left and came into the East, because I found that people would only laugh at them, an uncomfortable laugh, but they'd still laugh at them. So I put these songs away for the most part. But then I had a dream one night, and I dreamed that I heard Kate and Jody singing these songs. And so I called Jody, and he said, "Well, send them along." And so I did send them along, and yes, they did sing them, and sang them better than I ever possibly thought they could be sung.
Thank you.
those old booming workers. It was Lost John Cloud from Oklahoma. He said, they fired a cannon to start the Oklahoma land rush, and the people heard the boom of the cannon, and ever since then they've been called boomers, people who go about to move from place to place, shift and flow, a job here and a job there, the boom towns. Well, of course, the wealth of the West was created by the boomers, was created a lot of immigrant labor in the logging and in the mines in Butte and all over the West. The problem was that they only got back a small portion of the wealth that they created. The rest of it went to build the big mansion districts around Spokane and in Seattle and Portland, you know. And all of that wealth came out of the blood and the sweat and the hardship of really hardworking people. That's one of the reasons that I continue to belong to the industrial workers of the world, the Wobblies, because we are committed to the idea that the people who create the wealth are going to get it back. Labor creates all wealth, so all wealth belongs to labor. This is a love song for boomers.
My love is a river where the white waters pour. I've hunted and trapped her through the gates of Lodore. She sings through a curtain of cold mountain rain, where I dug her bright silver in the high Coeur d'Alene. She'll never be mine, she'll never be mine. I've won all her treasures, the simple and fine. I guess she'll never be mine. My love's a cantina where I drink with my friends. I've called her Dolores or sometimes Cheyenne. I've followed her begging all over the West. My love is a headlight on the midnight express. She'll never be mine, she'll never be mine. I've won all her treasures, so simple and fine. I guess she'll never be mine. My love is Montana and the high Douglas fir. Many long summers I've labored for her. My love is the windrows of dry autumn corn that grew on the land where my children were born. She'll never be mine, she'll never be mine. I've won all her treasures, so simple and fine. I guess she'll never be mine. My love is a life that a boomer will lead. You bought her with lies and you chained her with greed. My love is a dreamer, I'll follow the dream. You say she's a beggar, I say she's a queen. Someday she'll be mine, someday she'll be mine. I want all her treasures, so simple and fine. I know someday she'll be mine.
I've only had two great dreams in my life. One of them was to become the kind of person from whom it's impossible to steal. The other is to be able to make rain. The first one means that I know so much about my internal landscape, I know so much about me, about who I am, that I can deal with possession in a far more creative way than I've been able to. The second one means that I know so much about what's going on around me, how the wind pushes the clouds and the rain comes down, and becomes so much a part of that that I can become in it, I can move with it. And then the two come together, because I think they're all the same thing anyway. Kind of like being a glass of water with its own identity. I pour my glass into the ocean, not that I lose my identity, but that it merges with everything else. I know that sounds somewhat mystical. I made this song fell into my brain. I was walking the 50 feet between the east door of the state capitol in Salt Lake City, Utah, to my car, feeling somewhat hemmed in by the average annual dilapidated appearance of reality. Now, other people have sung this song. The first time I sang this song once in my life, and that was to Rosalie Sorrells in her living room. That's almost 40 years ago. And then I walked away from it. I've never sung this song since. I do have good recorded versions of this song, which I thought of using. But I've listened to them, and I've noticed that nobody has the tune right. The tunes I got are just fine, but the tune, the way I made it, my tunes, the tunes that come into my mind are like built like walking up and down stairs. So I'm just going to sing this song, I guess for the second time in the past 40 years. It'll give you a rough idea of what the tune is supposed to be, as well as the words. I tried playing this with the guitar, but my hands don't work properly, and I'm going to have to get used to singing unaccompanied anyway. So you see if you get anything out of this. Sometimes I wonder how the simple rain can weep, or why the wind's a lonely child that cries itself to sleep. I've envied all the sunlight, the amber of its smile, and wished it could be borrowed for a while. If I could be the rain, I'd wash down to the sea. If I could be the wind, there'd be no more of me. If I could be the sunlight and all the days were mine, I would find some special place to shine. But all the rain I'll ever be is locked up in my eyes, and when I hear the wind it only whispers sad goodbyes. If I could hide the way I feel, I'd never sing again. Sometimes I wish that I could be the rain. If I could be the rain, I'd wash down to the sea. If I could be the wind, there'd be no more of me. If I could hide the way I feel, I'd never sing again. Sometimes I wish that I could be the rain. Well, that's what the songbook is going to pretty much sound like. This is UUtah Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest, and you have been listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. That opening poem, by the way, was from Gary Snyder, and we'll close with this from Stephen Crane. In the desert, I met a creature, naked, bestial, who, squatting on the ground, held his heart in his hands and ate of it. "Is it good, friend?" I asked. "It is bitter, bitter," he replied. "But I love it because it is bitter, and because it is my heart. If I should cast off this tattered coat and go free into the mighty sky, if I should find nothing there but a vast, blue, echoless, ignorant, what then?"